In Kye and Beaky, Co and Merch, on the tractor, off to church, the locals tune to Macca on a Sunday morning.
The shortage of staff is a huge issue for all small businesses and agriculture. I'm in Stanthorpe today, Ian, and it's a major issue down here as well. I think we've made some mistakes after the COVID and during the COVID about sending international students home, but it's time to get it fixed. It's really important for all of our small business economies. We just can't get staff. Where have all the people gone? And I'm in Queensland, and half of Victoria have moved to Queensland, but we still can't get staff. But we can't just talk about it. We need to get people here on the ground. The numbers are that there's less than 4% unemployment in Australia, and maybe those folks just are unemployable. So we just have to factor that into what we do. Businesses need to pay them properly. We need to be able to house them properly so that everyone's comfortable. And we go back to that fair economy that we had when we were all growing and all thinking that Australia was bulletproof.
Ladies and gentlemen, Debbie's in the independent grocery business.
Coca-Cola have told our industry that they're going to be 70,000 truck drivers short at Christmas time. You know, all of our warehouses, our loads are late. So all of those pressures are true economic pressures, and they're reducing our productivity. Thumbs on seats is what we need.
I wink around, he picks me up when I feel down.
I wait all week for Macca on a Sunday morning. They're building yards on Camfield Station. Reports come in from around the nation, and it's cold enough to freeze a rat in Stanthorpe. In the Cessna or the Fokker, or waiting for the Walker Walker.
You're all clear for takeoff on a Sunday morning.
My week lifts off with Macca on a Sunday morning.
Right. Good morning. Welcome to the program, wherever you are. Lovely to have your company. I've got a little plastic bottle of Norco fresh milk here, which I got the other day up in, where did I get it, Kel? Up in Corakai. Because when you're away, you have a cup of tea, sometimes with milk, some without. And it was just funny because I hadn't seen the Norco brand, because I think when I was a kid, you could get Norco butter. But I haven't seen Norco milk because, you know, there's different brands of milk and butter wherever you happen to be in Australia. But, of course, the trials and tribulations of Norco continue, and I think their board is meeting this Thursday because they've had to get rid of staff, and the board will meet this Thursday to discuss its future. Now, imagine that's up Lismore way, Norco ice cream, and if that goes, I mean, does the good people up there need any more hits below the belt? But anyway, we'll see what happens with that. But I was interested. It's a nice little thing of milk, and tasty milk. I also, my correspondent in Perth, Gwen, sends me bits and pieces of information about what's going on, which I really appreciate. And she sent me a great Trains of Australia, because she was in a shop in Frio, I think, and that was because it's two-thirds of the way through the year and the 22 calendar was going half price. So she picked it up and she sent it to me. And when I opened the first page, it says here, for January, this past, recently reactivated after a 12-year hiatus. It's a picture of 3801. Remember when David Hill was here at the ABC? Don't we all remember that favourably? And David had a lot to do with 3801. Recently reactivated after a 12, it was off the rails for 12 years. I think there was something wrong with the boiler and they had to send it to Germany or something, and then it was wrong. I don't know the, and then they had to get it done. So it was 12 years off the rails. Glamour Streamline, former New South Wales Government Railway C38 class number 3801, charges out of the southern New South Wales city of Goulburn during crew training and locomotive testing. 30 of these masterpieces once rode the main lines, the first five carrying semi-streamlining, like this one. So it's green, lovely green colour with sort of yellow stripes along it. And it probably pulled the Spirit of Progress, which went to Melbourne and Sydney. It's just a wonderful thing. So, and speaking of which, I just had a text, I think it's a text. Macca 3801 steam engine is going over the Harbour Bridge today at 8:30 with 8649 electric engine. Then it'll go up to Hornsby, then back to Central via Strathfield. Next week will be the Streamliner's diesel display at Goulburn Railway Roundhouse, October 1st to the 3rd. In Junee will be the 75th birthday of the Junee Roundhouse celebrations. It'll also be the Central Station Railway Station celebrations. Steam trains are running from Central to Hurstwell and back. F1 Red Rattler from Central to North Sydney, car sidings and back. Rail motors, Sydney to Chullora and Enfield and return. Rail motor running from Junee to Coolamon and Cootamundra, says JK, regular listener. There you are, JK. So it all hangs together. And good morning to Hoy Hall and Corbett's group and Shangalang. Was that a truck? And McCrory's Transport and Coastline Haulage. Our number this morning is 1300 700 222. Now, this came in from David Stevens. Did I give you the number? I did. And he says, it baffles me why Commons, because a lot of water around the place, a lot of water. You can't get on paddocks. Tom just told us that out in Narromine. Lots of grass up to your knee, but you can't get on the paddocks because there's water everywhere. He said the Macquarie River out where he is in central New South Wales has dropped 15 feet since yesterday, but there's a lot of water running around the place and there's a lot of rain coming for East Coast. Anyway, it baffles me, says David Stevens, as to why common sense has not prevailed with regard to preventative measures to ameliorate apparent increasing flood devastation across Australia. I am no geologist, but I can still remember learning about erosion in science class. Naturally, water erosion results in silt lying on riverbeds. That silt effectively raises the base of the river, thereby reducing the water capacity of the river to carry floodwaters. As we know, if a river can't hold the volume of water, the water flows onto adjacent river flats, which we call flooding. Why, oh why, do we not have a program of dredging rivers to remove the silt and or deepen the rivers so that they can cope with higher volumes of rainwater? I know we're not China, but if they can build artificial islands in the South China Sea by dumping earth on reefs, why can't we dredge rivers in Australia to reduce the opportunity for flooding to occur? We have a lot of large mining and earth-moving machinery. Put some of it to work cleaning and deepening our rivers. See, the rivers have silted up over hundreds of years, thousands of years, so they don't carry, and, you know, with modern, you know, community, that happens a lot more quickly, all sorts of stuff in rivers. So there needs to be some, I mean, you can't dredge the rivers and take all the snags and fallen trees out of them. That's not what it's about. It's about some sort of dredging, but you'll have all sorts of people be, oh, no, you can't do that. It's environmentally, no. So, but it seems to me, and this bloke, and my hydrologist who I was talking to the other day, who's retired after a year of being an hydrologist, he said the same thing. You know, the Wilson, which is one of the problems up there in Lismore Way, probably hasn't been dredged at all forever and just doesn't hold water anymore. Just doesn't hold water. Our number's 1300 700 222. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Dave here.
G'day, Dave.
How you going?
Yeah, good, mate.
Just on my way up to Mildura. I'm driving, passing through Swan Hill at the moment. We're going out to meet a group of kids. We're volunteering this week with a mob called Southern Cross Kids Camp.
Right, tell us more.
And we got about 20 kids coming to this particular event. They're foster care kids, Macca.
Mm.
And so we volunteer to put on a nice show for them for the week and give them a nice week of happy memories. We're going out to Camp Kedron. Never heard of that. That's out near Loxton, yeah. South Australia.
Right. And have you done this before, Dave?
Yeah, before the COVID. Obviously, the COVID shuts everything down. But, before the COVID, I've done a couple of these every this time of year. I like to get out and volunteer. So we've done two before. And it's a pretty long week, Macca. It's a hard work rounding up mob of kids.
I'll bet it is. And how are they? They react well to this?
Yeah, they do. You know, they do, because it's we try to put on a pretty good show, give them a really good time, and always the answer. We really try and encourage each other a bit to say yes when the kids ask to do something. It's always yes, and so we you're running around a fair bit, saying yes to young kids is pretty hard to do at times. but you know, these kids come from pretty hard places, Macca, and so I think they hear a lot of no.
Yeah.
And so our idea is to put a smile on their face and say yes.
And they, yeah, I suppose they've got some problems, the kids, have they?
That's usually the case, mate. That's usually the case. They're usually doing it tough at school and in the groups that they're part of. But they're usually happy, active kids that appreciate a good show. So it's always, it's well worth it.
And how did you get tied up in this, Dave?
Oh, mate, a friend of mine just said, hey, you've got two legs and a heartbeat. You'd probably work well with foster care kids.
Mm.
And so just there's a bit of a process for onboarding. But, it was just someone invited me along one year and I said, yeah, that sounds like a really important thing to do. We looked at foster care support at one point. And so I went through that sort of process. There's a lot involved in regards to having your home open to caring for kids.
Mm.
And so as part of camp as well, there's a bit of preparation, a mental preparation for that. But I just got invited along to do some training and said and thought to myself, yeah, there's a fair bit going on here and this is a really worthy cause. It also offers a week of respite for carers at home too. So they're supportive of the program.
Well, it's there should be more of it, Dave. I mean, it's fairly, yeah. It's not, as you've I think indicated, it's not easy. It's like looking after, you know, when you're old, it's like looking after 3 and 4 year olds, you know. They run here, and you're worn out after about 10 minutes. You've had it. You're looking for cover.
Yeah, running for cover. That's it. Looking for a cup of tea and quiet spot. But yeah. The Southern Cross Kids program runs a 2-to-1 adult ratio. So I'm volunteering on the basis of being a buddy. So that means I get assigned one young lad, and there's boys and girls on the camp, so we got women and men volunteering.
Well, good on you.
So you go 1-to-1 as a buddy, and then you have another group of 20 or so adults running the programs, you know, running the activities, fishing and swimming, and the girls are having a dress-up day, so they can have a nice cup of tea and, you know, do their nails and brush their hair and, you know, come up, brush up sharp.
I think there should be more of it that kids are taken out to, you know, out to the bush and just for a holiday. Because, I mean, I know a lot of kids do it, but there's a lot of kids that don't never have that experience. And it's very calming and comforting, I think, to the kids.
That's right, Macca. That's right. That's what we're targeting here, kids that probably would miss out on that sort of program and not because of fault of their own, of course.
No.
Kids don't choose to be in a foster care program. So that's sort of what it's all about, to try and make an environment where everyone's aware that it's a tough challenge, but it's the whole purpose is to build a consistent you know, memories in there that there are good people in community.
Yeah, exactly.
There's good folk out there. You know, and I think the idea with Southern Cross Kids is that we take in kids at the young, you know, the younger ones, prep and grade one type age, and so that they can keep coming back every year, and have that they know that Southern Cross runs a program every year, and I'll be able to go on that camp and get to know a group of leaders and have something consistent.
That's the way.
Over the years. Yeah.
Good on you, Davey. Keep up
thanks,
the good
Macca.
Work, mate. G'day, this is Macca.
Hey, Macca. It's Danny calling. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Danny.
Macca, I thought I'd just give you a quick report on the AFL Grand Final parade that they had down here in Melbourne on Friday.
It was
a pretty big event. Yep. We had, for the first time, the two teams came down the Yarra River on barges, would you believe, rather than just sitting in the back of the utes as they normally do, going up along the street parade. And my son and I went down fairly early to get to the river. We got one of the good positions just by the Princess Bridge, which is just near Federation Square and, and Flinders Street Railway Station. We thought we'd position ourselves right at the front where we'd see the turnaround, because we thought, oh, that's where we'll get the best view when they come down, they turn around, and they go back up again. And close to the time that they were expected, and we checked all our maps, we checked the things on the app and what have you to do that to make sure we were in the best vantage position. And there were people up on the bridge, people across from us, thousands of people there waiting. And they had a couple of rubber dinghies with lifeguards in them positioned just below where we were. But a few minutes before the flotilla of players were expected to come down, the rubber dinghies went upstream a couple of hundred metres. And I thought, this doesn't look good. There's something going on here. And you know how you get that gut feeling?
Yeah.
Sure enough, you just saw in the distance this big barge coming down. And it started to turn. And my son said, Dad, I don't think they're coming down here. And I said, no, they'll just be weaving across the river to give everyone on both sides a good view. They kept turning, and sure enough. So everybody started talking, checking the map, checking the app. And it was a big thing. It was talk of the day, how the barges didn't get down to probably one of the biggest spectator areas. So then we ran up to the MCG, which was a couple of Ks, I suppose. We got there. Saw the players go past in the utes and started having a listen to the players on the stage. It was a good morning, even so, but a bit of a logistical error in judgment there.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Nobody does it like Melbourne, like in the AFL, mate. I mean, it's just, it's huge, isn't it? It's just, you know, you can't, unless you, I'd say, unless you grew up in Melbourne or, you know, in an AFL city, you can't really understand the way that football sort of bonds everybody together.
You're right, Mac. It was huge. And to see that number of people, you know, make the effort to get to watch two teams, and we're not Geelong Cats or Sydney Swans supporters. So we made the effort to get to watch somebody else's team. So you're right. The passion that's involved with it just draws you to like a moth to a flame. And but you know what? We had a great morning. You
that's
know,
good.
We talked to a few other spectators there, and it was just a good event.
It brings people together.
Bit of a fizzer yesterday with the game though, Macca.
Yeah, bit of a fizzer. Well, who's your team, Danny?
Oh, Barrack for St Kilda States. Have forever.
Yeah,
reluctantly so, but still will. I'll play it out. I won't. I won't change now, Macca.
Good on you, Danny. Great to talk to you, mate.
Next year,
thanks.
Next year, Macca.
Well, there's always next year, mate. That's the beautiful hope about life, isn't it?
Good on you. How's your wrist, mate?
They're both crook. Yeah.
Wish you a speedy recovery, Macca.
Good on you, Danny.
Cheers, mate.
Our runner, Annie Boyd, is on the line. Good morning, Annie.
Oh, good morning, Macca. Lovely to hear your voice again.
And you are where?
I'm down on Roselle Bay. It's beautiful, misty, misty morning. Mist just rising off the water. I'm at the beginning of a Sri Shinnoi running event. And they're going to be running a 7K, a 4K and a half marathon around the bay.
Mm.
And still time if anybody wants to rush down and sign up. They accept registrations up to about 5 minutes before the start at 8 o'clock. So
there you go.
Yeah, it's a lovely place to be.
And
really
Annie,
beautiful.
You'll be heading to Alice Springs soon for the won't you, for the Olive Pink
Yes. I'm off on Thursday to Alice Springs for the Olive Pink opera with final rehearsals, and we've got a very full house, so both performances, so looking forward to that very much. Very exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be warm out there. I think it's warmed up in the centre.
Yeah, warm days, cold nights. That's the desert pattern. The show starts at 6:30, so it'll get colder. It'll run for about a bit over 90 minutes, I think. So by the time it reaches its end, it'll be getting pretty cool.
Are you excited about that? You must be.
Oh, I'm so excited. I mean, it's been an 8 years project and 2 years postponed performances because of COVID. So now to be actually going for gold is just brilliant. It's very exciting.
I'll say, and yeah, it's almost a life. It's not a lifetime's work, but you've put a lifetime of your knowledge into that work, I suppose, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely, Macca. In fact, the seed was sown back in 2008 when I was looking at the way in which Australian composers represent indigenous subjects in their music. And I'd started looking at some work by Margaret Sutherland, an opera on Daisy Bates, the young Kabali, and decided there was an opera to be written on the older Daisy Bates, so I started work on that.
Mm.
And then through that I met Olive Pink. Olive Pink was a great friend of Daisy Bates and used Daisy as a bit of a mentor. She's a younger woman, about 20 years younger. But the two remained lifelong friends, and she appears in the opera. So Daisy Bates appears in the opera.
Wow.
As well. And so does a man called Strelo, T.G.H. Strelo, another very famous character in the outback who collected the songs of Central Australian tribes.
Anthropologist, wasn't he?
Yeah. He's famous. His epic book is Songs of Central Australia, in which he gathers up all these wonderful songs from Aboriginal people all over the centre. So it's amazing work. But they didn't get on. Ollie Pink and Strelo, as often happens in professional fields, come into a bit of conflict, and he didn't support her, didn't think very highly of her, didn't like the fact that he thought she was trespassing on his territory. So anyway.
That'll happen.
So that happens. So anyway, she was sort of pushed out to work with the Walpuri people, who were a bit further out from the Arunda people, who's closer to Alice Springs and around Alice Springs. So, but that was really great because she then had two very close Aboriginal communities, and she always wanted to bring them together. And in fact, her original name for the Olive Pink Garden, she wanted to call it Altura Chukapa, which is bringing together the words for the Dreamtime from both the Arunda and the Walpuri. So it didn't. They call it the Olive Pink Botanical Garden, of course, but she wouldn't have been pleased by that. When we're doing the opera outdoors in the garden, so we have her living presence because, you know, some of the plants she planted are still growing there, and you sort of can feel the old girl around in the whole situation. So it's pretty exciting. Yeah.
And Annie, we had a lady ring earlier this morning. Her name's Raisa, and she's from Dubbo, but she's going to the London for the London Marathon. I think she leaves on Tuesday. And I think, is the Boston Marathon on now, or one of them's on now or something? One of them at the moment, I don't know. But
Chicago. Chicago's coming up. No, it's actually Berlin's is today. Berlin is today.
Oh, that's right.
She's
off to the London Marathon, and she says she gets a medal, I think, when she finishes it, because she's running most of them.
She's trying to do all six, or she will do all six. The six majors, that was my retirement aspiration, actually. I said to my dean at the time, I'm going to retire now to run the world, and I wanted to do the six majors before I turn 80. I'm not a fast runner like she is. She's a very fast runner. That 3:30, that's a terrific time in her age group. I'm about 25 minutes slower than a Boston qualifier at my age group. But last Sunday, it was really exciting to do the Sydney Marathon. And it's a beautiful run. It starts on the other side of the Harbour Bridge, runs across the city up to our Centennial Park, and has 10K doing loops in the garden, and then heads back down across the city and out to Pyrmont, and then comes back along the bay. Beautiful Barangaroo. So you're sort of running with water so much of the race.
I think
either in parks or water.
I think the Hobart Airport Marathon's on today. Is that right? Would that be right?
It could well be. It could well be. Yes. I think you could be right. Yes.
They're running. See, I'm not sure. I'm not at all interested in going running, but it's more popular than ever, Annie, isn't it?
It's growing and growing and growing, Macca. It's so exciting, and the it's the park run movement that really is creating a groundswell of interest in running in all areas of the community. And it is the most beautiful community builder. That's what I really love about it. Yeah. It brings people together,
exactly,
and people of all standards. And
that's right. Annie, I've got to fly. You have a great time in Alice Springs, and we'll catch up soon.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Okay, Macca.
Good on you.
God bless.
Bye.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Ian. It's Deborah Allard here in Upper Burringbar near Moolumbar, and my husband's the pin-up boy for Norco.
Tell me more, Deb.
His little face is on every Norco bottle, so everyone that's listening to you at the moment, Ian, can just open their fridge and wave to Jim in the fridge. And
I keep a photo of myself in the fridge. I keep better in there.
So if you actually do have Jim in your fridge, make sure your beer goes right next to him because he likes it like that.
Tell me, what's the face of Norco? What's this all about? I mean, I know what it's all about. They're thinking of going under, are they? Or is that the story?
No. So the marketing, when we only restarted our dairy after 125 years of dairying on this particular farm. We started our dairy 6 years ago, so I could make cheese with a little bit of milk and Norco could have the rest of the milk. And when we first started, because the dairy was lovely and new and everything was clean and fresh, Norco came out and did an advertising campaign using wanting dairy farmers to be part of the face of Norco,
yeah.
Which obviously makes sense rather than, you know, good-looking models with clean fingernails. So they came out to us and they did the pitch and, you know, it was just really lovely. Jim's dad passed away last year, but Jim's mum and dad were a part of the pitch and they pitched it to the board and everyone just loved it. So now, you know, there's lots of dairy farmers being used as marketing. And it was probably about maybe 12 months ago, Jim went to the local service station and they said, "Oh, my God, Jim, you're famous. Your face is on all the bottles."
There you go. I was up at Corakai last week, a week before, and I bought a little thing of milk, 500 mils, And I hadn't seen Norco since we were kids because, you know, there's dairy farmers and there's all sorts of different milk and different butters and stuff like that. But his picture's not on here, but it's only...
No, Macca, you can't buy 500 milk. Come on.
But I was only there for 2 days. I was only there for 2 days.
You still have to buy 2 litres wherever you go.
Oh, really?
Come on.
But look, Norco's facing some troubles, aren't they? The board's meeting on Thursday and to discuss its future, which is very sad because we don't...
Just the future of the ice cream. So, no, Norco's doing all right. The great thing about the farmer pitch was that people realised that the dollar milk was killing everybody.
Mm.
And to support Norco, Norco is, I think it's the only Australian farmer-owned company. So the farmers own Norco. We get, you know, we're run by farmers. We have the farmers have the input.
Uh-huh.
And it's only the ice cream because it keeps getting flooded. It doesn't really make any sense to just keep pumping money into something that's going to keep going underwater. So that's the decision.
Yeah, the problem is there'll be a lot of people lose their jobs, won't they?
Yeah, it's a hard reality. But, you know, we had 200 mil in about a day and a half here this week.
This week.
And the underground water table is just chock-a-block full.
Chock-a-block,
there's nowhere for that water to go. So, you know, to have 200 mil in a day and a half, just out of the blue, it's just really tough. So you have to make tough decisions.
Well, you better send me...
It's a time for reflection.
Yeah.
And every time we have an event, we opened 6 years as a dairy factory. And in that 6 years, we've had the fires, with floods, a cyclone, a pandemic. We've had it all in 6 years, so...
We've had it all, yeah.
There's reflection in every business.
All right, Deb, good on you. And, look, there's no picture on the 500 mil, but send me a photo of... Is Jim, is it?
Jim Gillard. He's the pin-up boy for Norco.
The face of Norco. Good on you, Deb. Nice to talk to you.
Bye, Ian.
See you. Bye. This is the All Over News. It seems like only yesterday we were talking about the Darling River and the fact that there was no water in it. Well, it doesn't take long in Australia for things to change, and apart from floods around Gunnedah and the Lachlan running a banker and things like that, I think there have been about 3 flooding events in the Darling River, and one continues now, of recent times. But as to floods, our correspondent Kamlesh Achari says, should we learn from Noah's Ark example and design homes that could float on guided poles? Perhaps some left-field thinking may help beat the flooding issue, says Kamlesh. And Michael Bentley says, the house that I've invented will float. The house has a tank for a floor so that it will float. The house has large poles secured into the ground and going up the corners of the house so that it will not float away. Because it can float, people do not need to be evacuated and the contents will not get damaged or need replacing. I've contacted many people and as yet have not had any replies. I've also made a working model. I do not want any money for my idea and it will not get patented as I fully understand the problems of a catastrophic situation like the recent floods because our house was burnt to the ground on New Year's Eve in 2019. We ourselves are almost back to normal after some amazing help. I'm sure that the engineering could be altered or the architecture changed, but this is just a general idea and I'd be happy to be contacted by anyone who can help me with the project. I'm hoping that we can help a lot of people, says Mick Benley. Thank you, Michael. Last week, or was it the week before, we were up on the banks of the Richmond River doing an outside broadcast. And you might remember I noticed a bloke, when you're doing an outside broadcast, it's not like in the studio here, you've got not much to look at, so you don't get distracted. But when you're doing an outside broadcast, there's people everywhere. There's dogs and brightly coloured people in purple and smocks and strange hairdos. So you get distracted all the time. Well, I do. It's not difficult for me to get distracted. And in front of me, while I was doing a phone call and talking, there was a bloke sort of sitting there and he had bare feet and he was picking his toenail, which I noticed. And he's emailed me. His name's Jordan Edmeads. And he says, hi, Macca. Jordan here, the big barefoot doco filmmaker who you spoke to in the front row at Corakai a few weeks back. I heard from Kerry from the Corakai Transaction Centre, and she told me that the community day out on the riverbank was a huge success. So I just wanted to write and say thanks to you and your team for the work you did there. I've toured as a professional actor, and for most people, what you do looks like it's pretty easygoing life, a good laugh. But I saw straight up how much hard work was going on behind the scenes to make it happen. Not to mention you were doing an outside broadcast and all the challenges that come with that type of broadcast. You guys make it look easy. I enjoyed talking to you and love your conversation style with the punters. You have an amazing ability to be present and listen and draw out the more interesting, emotional, passionate side to people's stories. I learnt a lot watching you work that day. Jordan, I always learn a lot when I do an outside broadcast. He says, I'm currently down at Lutruwita, Tassie, these are Aboriginal names for Tassie, on one of the beach foreshores of the Kanamaluka River, that's the River Tamar, near, this is a good one, listen to this, Kinimathatakinta. I think that's right, Kinimathatakinta. That's Georgetown, cleaning up marine debris washed up on shore and litter dumped by passers-by. Part of a broader personal project to actively offer my respects to Aboriginal people by cleaning and clearing every publicly accessible beach on the island and the surrounding ones, that is, Flinders and King, etc. And yes, I'm aware it could take a decade, but it's my way of more connected, informed and culturally aware presence in myself. And just as an aside, Jordan, I reckon everybody should be doing that, cleaning up a bit of litter here and there. Jordan continues, you wouldn't believe the conversations I'm having with the people who are coming along the path, just 3 metres from where I'm cleaning up. I've found myself in quite the beautiful dilemma and people are intrigued. Long story short, I've given myself one rule on this project. No matter where the piece of rubbish or debris is, if I see it, I must get it. Sounds simple enough, right? But here's the reason I've been digging in the dirt in this estuary bank for 2 days straight now. I came across a handful of polystyrene balls from what was maybe a burst beanbag. But what I soon discovered was not just a handful, but tens of thousands of these little white balls spread over a 40-metre stretch due to the movement of the tides. So, as per my principal rule here, I cannot leave until every single polystyrene ball has been collected and bagged up. He laughs. I'm the same with editing. Near enough is not good enough. It's a terrible plight to have. Jordan. Anyway, he concludes, I'm living in my camper van here now for the foreseeable future, scraping at the earth with tools donated by passers-by, aided by a retired bloke called Pete, an angry, frustrated, depressed, brilliant guitarist who is slowly coming out of his shell and opening up to me. So many stories to share and not once have pulled my camera out. Seems I'm living in a live documentary, because Jordan's a documentary maker amongst other things, and an actor. I'll save some stories for a phone call one Sunday morning if you're keen to hear more. says Jordan Edmeads. That's what people are doing, kids. More from our correspondents from David White. Hi, Ian. Just wanted to let you know that this year, being the 20th anniversary of the Bali bombing, the Dunluce Youth Development Foundation in Ulladulla, south coast of New South Wales, as you know, is a charity started by Gail Dunn, mother of two of the young blokes killed, raised money with the assistance of John Howard and built the Dunluce Centre in Ulladulla, and are having a commemorative of events called Rise, running from the 1st to the 12th of October. The 13th of October is the actual anniversary day, and on that day a memorial wall containing 88 tiles in memory of the 88 Australian victims will be unveiled. During the 12 days of Rise, there will be a raft of events, including music concerts, surfing competitions. Both boys were from Ulladulla and they were surfers, and that was why they went to Bali. A gala dinner featuring Tom Berlinson and his 12-piece band, schools competitions, 10-pin bowling, a classic car day, I think, on the 12th, and concerts by Frankie J. Holden and Wilbur Wilde and a lot of other events. John White says, maybe, Ian, you could do a live broadcast from Ulladulla. Well, David, it's not a bad idea. That's Ulladulla from the 1st to the 12th of October.
I say unto you that the things people do, things by bushman or banker or drover, are reflected each week in the moment we seek, in communion by talking it over.
Ah, the banks.
There was John up in Miles when his bank had made piles, watched it pack up and off with his dough go. And sweet Marguerite, whose phone box in the street was saved by the siege of Eubobo. The collection will be passed around after the next hymn.
Ah, the banks. That's our little song from years ago when the banks were leaving town. And then there was a hiatus of sorts for a while. Some reopened and now an avalanche of closures. Dale Webster, this year, won the Walkley Foundation's Freelance Journalist of the Year Award specifically for her work on regional bank closures. And, of course, it's not just regional banks that are closing. Ask someone in your suburb if they've got a bank. Dale Webster is on the line. And good morning, Dale.
Good morning, Ian.
Tell me, why have you been writing, why have you been obsessed, if you like, about banks?
Yeah, it has become a little bit obsessive. But the backstory is my dad was an ANZ bank manager, so I grew up being carted around regional Victoria and living behind banks and just seeing how the whole business operated. And I've been reporting on it for the Weekly Times for a number of years. And then when I left there, I kept going, tracking numbers for some time. I broke a story when banks really accelerated their closures again. It's probably the first time since about 2000, going back to about 2017, 2018, I could just see that they were gaining momentum again. And my dad at the time helped me put together what is now probably the only full record of Big Four banks from 1975 to current day. So I'm able to write about this subject from that platform. But Dad, just a little bit about him. He helped so many people. He went from Cobram, where they were pulling out orchards, financial crisis there. Then he moved up to Myrtleford for the tobacco crisis. And then they put him in Hamilton, where the bottom fell out of the bull market. So, you know, my dad was of that era where bank managers could really, really help farmers and local business people, and was very hands-on.
Where have those bank managers gone? Now, give people some idea of some of the stats. You've sent me a note here. It says 585 towns have lost all banks. And it's not just in regional, is it? I live in a suburb which has no bank now, and it's happening right across Australia, isn't it? You've got Tom Price, Wongan Hills, Junee, you name it.
I think this is getting more attention nationally because they're starting to run out of places they can close branches in the country, and they've started on suburban branches.
So how many towns do you reckon are threatened with losing their bank now?
According to my records, which have proved to be correct, there's 84 towns that are down to their last bank, or they've only ever had one major bank. And I just looking at the trends that I've been watching over the last couple of years in particular, if those towns don't get in and start fighting for those banks now, they're going to find themselves without a bank.
Now, you've organised a petition. Why have you done that, and what do you hope will be the outcome of that? That's gone to the federal parliament, right?
Yeah. So kind of the culmination of this campaign to raise awareness about regional bank closures, the minister, the relevant minister, which will be Jim Chalmers and or Stephen Jones, the finance minister, will actually have to respond to this once it goes to them. The Labor government made a commitment in the last one saying that if the banks couldn't be trusted to do the right thing and keep regional branches open, I'm paraphrasing it a bit, that they would introduce community service obligations and look at re-regulating the banking industry. Every town needs a bank. And it is, as long as we've got cash, every town needs a bank.
That's why they want to get rid of cash.
Yeah, they do. And I've looked very closely at what the banks have been saying about it becoming a cashless society. And it doesn't stack up. It's a narrative that's coming from the banks. But if you actually go out into these towns and see what's happening and look at the cash that's being held by the community banks, it's very obvious that it's not reflective of what's going on. In fact, Australia has, this is the really damning figure, Australia has more cash in circulation now than it's had at any time in its history. They're having to print more money. There's so much cash out there.
Dale Webster, if people want to sign that petition, how do they go about that?
They can get onto the Australian Parliament website, but if they just want to note this number down now, it's EN4244. They can also get onto my website, The Regional. I publish independently.
Well, good luck. It must be hard being a freelance journalist without the support, say, of nine newspapers or News Limited behind you.
That's a really interesting thing to say, because media organisations will not report on other media organisations. And I actually contacted my old employer last week and said, look, I started this work with you. This is really important. Can you share the petition link? And they opted not to. Yeah, it is hard, but the ABC has been terrific. You know, this is so important. There's two things I think every country town should have, is a bank and a footy club. You know, it's the fabric, I think, gives it identity.
Dale Webster, thanks for your time.
No worries at all.
G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, this is Matt and Eli from Tassie.
Yes, Matt and Eli, how are you?
How you doing? Yeah. We're actually just going into Halls Creek in Western Australia at the moment, so we're just ring and say g'day. We're disciples of yours.
You're a long way from home. You're Maddie, are you?
Yeah, I'm Maddie, and Eli's driving, so I thought I'd better do the talking. So we've jumped in a XU1 Tirana. We've driven up to Bathurst and then jumped on a rally around Australia. So
wow,
12 Tirana XU1s racing around, and it's been an adventure, that's for sure. So we've got 22 days to get from Bathurst to up to Broome and around back to Bathurst for the race. It's good fun.
When's the race on? This is the big race?
Yeah, the big race. I think we've only got a couple of weeks left, so if all goes well, we should be back in there. Should be good.
And is this your XU1, Matt?
Oh, this is Eli's, my mate. So he's driving, and he's had this old girl since he was 16, and it's an unrestored, GTR XU1. I think it came out of Brisbane it was made. These guys that were driving around at Gurus, they know every pinhole in these cars. They're fantastic.
How exciting. Somebody gave me a book the other day about, you know, older cars and what they're worth and stuff. I bet an XU1's worth a bomb, is it?
Yeah, there's a pretty penny driving around the countryside at the moment, so it's awesome.
Yeah, I'll say.
It's what they were made to do, though. It's good to see them out on the road. They're getting so precious. They're all getting tucked away in sheds now and not getting used.
Yeah. And I suppose, is it hard to keep the parts up to them or not?
It's not too bad, actually. Well, we've just accepted that and just kept moving. So we had an adventure. We lost a valve in Kalgoorlie, so we limped her into Perth. We had to get the head taken off and recondition the head. And we got moving, so we got up the road. We got to about 4 hours out of Carnarvon, and then went bang, and rattling went absolutely nuts. The roadside assistance wasn't any use, so we pulled up a local bloke who was driving. He was driving 1,000 k's to help his mate move some cactuses he's got up there, with a ute with a car, empty car trailer, and he was busting for a pee, and he pulled over to in the same car park that we were in the middle of nowhere. You wouldn't dream of it. It's a 1 in a million opportunity. So, and he was fantastic. He and his mate towed us all the way up to Carnarvon, and then they raced around Carnarvon finding bits and pieces of the car. And by the next day, we're back on the road. It's just been fantastic. So all the locals, all around, you know, out here, everyone just helps everyone. So he just couldn't leave us on the side of the road, so he just picked us up, took us on.
No, but, mate, when you're driving an XU1 or there's a few of them around, it's just like a magnet.
Yeah, it's amazing the people that come out of the woodwork. It's brilliant. So you pull into a caravan park and all these 50 to 60-year-old blokes just wander out of everywhere. It's like they've come out of the bush.
And do you rev it? Does it rumble when you idle it, or is it got a rumble about it?
Yeah. We when we start the car up at about 6 in the morning, if not earlier, in the caravan park, there's 12 of them, so everyone knows we're about to take off.
Oh, wow. What a fantastic trip. So where are you going now? Down to Perth and back across, or what?
No, I think we're taking it easy, so we've been leaving about 2 o'clock in the morning, so we're a day behind the rest of the crew because our car went booked for a while.
Yeah.
So we're heading off about 4 every day and doing to it about 3-4 hours and pulling up and then heading off at about 2 in the morning and just taking it real easy, like heaps of coffee in our bellies and keep looking out for road, the animals down the road. So,
we'll
get there.
And as part of Bathurst, is there a race for XU1s?
When we get back to the track, they're talking about doing a couple of honour laps. So it's called Around the Block for Brock. So it's in honour of Brocky and this car. You know, it was 50 years ago when he had a crack and won it. So
they were the days, mate. They were the days.
We're all a little bit addicted to it. So it's I'm running a different car, but you know these are all. It doesn't matter if it's a Ford or a Holden or a Valiant. Everyone loves these old cars, and everyone's got respect for them. So great.
Now, Matt and Eli, you're traveling at the moment. You're driving at the moment.
Yep. And we're about 70 k's out of Halls Creek. So hit Fitzroy Crossing at about 5 o'clock this morning. So,
yep. Give us a look out your window.
Oh, we got termite mounds everywhere. It's actually green and lush, like it's quite thick. But it's a beautiful sky. We had a bit of cloud cover this morning, so we've had a good run. It's going to be 40 degrees before we know it, so we're trying to get in there as quickly as possible. So, but otherwise, it's just that big, beautiful sky and stunning, absolutely stunning. So,
Matty, it's lovely to talk to you and Eli, and keep up the good work. Safe trip, and enjoy Bathurst.
We will. So thanks, mate. We'll keep listening.
All right, mate. Good on you. Thanks, Matty. Oh, our rowing correspondent's on the line, Mark Campbell. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
We thought you'd rowed out of sight.
I did get out of sight for a couple of weeks. I've just been up. You're talking about Lake Eyre. We went up, we were going to try and do a boat trip down the Warburton River, but we got 3 days, had a fantastic time, and camping under the stars and, you know, fires by the riverbank, and then the water sort of ran out, so we had to turn around, but that was an incredible experience. I'm just sitting on the Northern Rivers to myself. If I find an LPG station, I'll let that fella know. But I was looking at Moolumbar before when Deb called from Moolumbar, actually. It's looking at Mount Warning. Yeah.
Well, that book was called The Great Filling of Lake Eyre in 1974, and they said then this book was published in 1989, and there was a, funnily enough, this it said that 1974 filling was the biggest in 150, 200 years that they knew of. Who knows what went on before? And then this book was published in 1989, and I think it was about 1989 there was another great filling, but we haven't had a complete filling. This one is 1974. There's photos here, and there's just water everywhere, north and south Lake Eyre, and they're big areas and huge seas, and it's just fantastic. Cliffs and Just a magnificent body of water. When it's full like that, it's just...
Yeah.
And there is still a lot of water coming down, but I don't know if it's going to fill this time, but who knows?
No, it's not going to fill. No, it's petering out pretty fast. They're hoping if they get another... They're supposedly, because it's not La Nina, we might get another one this year.
Mm.
But the Warburton... I mean, those rivers, everyone should, if they ever get a chance, that doesn't happen that often. Like we, the last time the Cooper filled was when we were out there. That was 2011. That was the last time. Mm. And those trees haven't had a drink since then. You realise what unbelievable trees coolabahs are. That was the thing I think I almost took the most out of. But they're like these big green arteries that run into, like, it's a fascinating thing. And the life and the birds and, you know, there's such beautiful places, and they're like 5 kilometres wide most of the time. And then they don't. There's no rain there for 10 or 20, or even longer. There was a patch of trees, coolabahs, we saw beside the Warburton that has not been inundated since that 1974 event.
Really?
And they're still alive. Yeah, you've got to see it to believe it. They're, you know, and that's what I'd say to anyone. If you get the chance to get out and get on that water and go through it, I've done it now twice, and it's two of the most memorable things I've ever done. And you know, especially the Warburton, because it's got bigger trees, because it floods a bit more often, like 4 to 5 years, because it gets the water from the wet a bit more often. So, but it's just beautiful. It's sort of difficult to describe. But
Well, it is. It's like when you know, as I've always said, when you see you're part of a great thunderstorm or something, or you're in a, you know, I've been caught in a little mini typhoon and just had to stop the car, and there was trees going south. And you know, when you see a parched, you know, droughted landscape, or you see the aftermath, or you see a film of a bushfire, they're just awesome things. But if you look at Lake Eyre, and I look at these photos of Lake Eyre full of water, it's just a magic thing. And it's right in the middle of Australia, and it's just fantastic. Yeah. It's, you know, people can talk about mobile phones and, you know, Kim Kardashian. I mean, this plays it off a break. It's just, you know, it's just awesome stuff, you know.
And you have to see it to believe it. It's so, like that area that I rode across back in 2011 on my skull, we stopped at the end where I turned around. That has not had water on it since 2011. That has not been inundated. It had a few little showers here and there. But those trees are still going. Like, you know, we sing about the coolabah in, you know, Waltzing Matilda, but you just don't get it until you see that those trees can go 20 or more years without a proper drink.
It's unbelievable. In this little book, which I just found, and there's so many wonderful things, it says here, while the lake was completely dry in 1972, so Lake Eyre was completely dry, and we've got to remember that that's where Campbell attempted his world speed record on Lake Eyre, didn't he?
Yep.
So it's dry, completely dry in 72. Then 74, the biggest filling ever. After the 74 filling, the southern bays of Lake Eyre North remained water covered until January 1979, when they were completely dry for the first time since 74. It's an amazing, and it keeps changing all the time. It's a bit like Lake George, you know, which had no water in it. Now it's got water in it, I believe. I haven't been down there lately, but it filled after many years of being completely dry. So wonderful things to see the way nature just works, Mark.
You see this explosion of life. It's awesome. So if you get a chance to anybody, you know, make sure you go and just see when the rivers are running, or even if they're not, it's an amazing landscape. You go, you know, through the Sturt Desert, and one side you've got the Taamari Desert on one side, and you've got the Sturt Desert on the other.
Tarari,
that's right. I kept calling it the Tiara Desert, Tarari Desert. So you've got that on one side, and then you've got this green, like a park now, that's, you know, full of lignum and coolabahs, and it's, you know, birds everywhere. And then on the other side, you've got the Sturt Desert. You've just got to see it to believe it, really. It's beautiful. Coral reefs in the river, you know, submerged coral reefs. It's just, you know, which are coming out now because the water's dropping again. But, you know, like it was a great trip. And the other thing I did find, which might be of use, was the best pie we've ever had. Both you and I said it was important news. So yeah, kangaroo and claret pie from the Copley Bakery was the best pie either of us have ever tasted. It
really?
Was unbelievable. Truly. I really, you know, couldn't talk it up too much.
Sometimes, Mark, when I have the same experience, not necessarily with a pie. It was once with a vanilla slice in St Kilda, which I can never again. But it can be because, you know how sometimes you have a meal and you're so hungry, you could eat a horse, you know, and chase the rider, as they say.
It
could have been a moment like that, Mark, where you're really hungry and you could have eaten sand, you know, you could have eaten lumps of dirt and it would have tasted passable.
Good. It just turned up at the right time. It was a bit like
Yeah. So what's happening in the world of rowing and the world of dogs? Start with the world of rowing first.
Well, the World Championships is on this weekend. The finals are on. They've been on all week. And Australia's doing pretty well. We got a silver in the four last night. The only one I could see. I had to go to bed early because I've got to drive all day to get home tonight. Been up seeing Mum on the Gold Coast. So we've got some other good races to come. I think both the men's and women's eights, which will be on tonight. If anyone just Googles World Rowing Championships, you'll get to see them. There's some, you know, we've actually got some good chances. And Tara Rigney in the single scull, the women's single, she's a real chance for a medal. She's a bit of a superstar, great girl. And both the men's and women's would be a chance for a medal, I would think. But one thing I did notice, and this is, you know, we've all, you know, we love Australian made, but Howard Croker's oars, he's up against a juggernaut, an American company. It doesn't matter what their name is. They're good guys, but, you know, they can support countries overseas. But there was only one country that rowed within the men's and women's eights that I could see that had his oars, and that was the American women, funnily enough, because it's an American company that's got the other oars, and they won their heat. So go figure. But, you know, I just really noticed, and good on Howard and Darren for, you know, they do some fantastic work. And the American women have stuck with his oars right through, and they've had an awful lot of success. So I just love seeing it. You know, they stand out a bit, and I don't mind. You know, it's just lovely to see something Australian made doing so well at that level still. There's quite a few of the scullers use his oars, but just in the sweep or in the eights, I think they were the only crew and they happened to win. So there you go.
See
how they go in the final. Yeah.
Well, Mark, you'll have to come in soon. I haven't seen you. I assume you still look somewhat similar, but it seems, as I said, we thought you'd rode off over the horizon.
Well, good. I'd love to come in and talk about some of the things, the Flinders Ranges we saw and the geology there. And just a shout to Doug Spriggs at Arkaroola there, that he gave us one of the best presentations I've ever seen.
Did you go for a drive with him out through the ranges and stuff?
Well, we stayed there and went through driving right through the Flinders Ranges. Once we abandoned the water trip with Rex Ellis, we went back through the Flinders and had an awesome time there too, camping. And Doug was going to take us for a fly, but it was too windy that day. So instead, he gave us the best presentation on geology I've ever seen in my life.
He's fantastic, yeah. Isn't he? And he's got a little telescope there, sort of a little
observatory.
Yeah. And you can look through it. That was great too, and he showed you a bit.
Special guy, and if he's listening, shout out. It was amazing. Do you know that a nuclear submarine, this is one thing that just came out of, you know, talking about the geology, a nuclear submarine is powered by a piece of U-235 the size of a golf ball, and that drives a 45,000 horsepower motor. I found that amazing.
Well, I do too.
It's incredible.
Yeah, and what with that and billion-year-old carbon, I can't get my head around it.
Get rid of it. There's a solution there somewhere, mate. It'll take a bit of doing and some bigger brains than mine, but it was pretty impressive. And, you know, that whole Arkaroola area and the Flinders and, you know, Central Australia, it's really worth getting to.
I'll say.
And, yeah.
I'll see you.
And good luck to the Aussies in the finals tonight, eh?
Listen, Mark, tell me, what's the deal? What's the deal with the Wallabies? I mean, they keep getting not just beaten; they keep getting flogged. What's going on? Ever since Israel Folau got the elbow, nothing's happened for them. I mean, dear oh dear. I mean,
well, maybe they. I'll see if I can get Angus Campbell to. Because sure won't be me. he's playing in for Utahs. Maybe they'll get a last minute call up from down there. But I don't know. Look, it's hard. New Zealand and New Zealand. It sure is nothing. Yeah, well, when I was still playing, is the last time they beat him in '86 at Eden Park.
That's a long time, isn't it?
It's a big. Yeah. So we got some great players. We can do it. I've watched the World Cup. I think they've got some great guys in there now, and they've been a bit up and down. But you know, see how we go. watch this space,
Hope springs eternal in the human beast or breast or whatever it is. Yeah.
But Penrith got up last night and played like the champions they are, so that gave me a bit of a buzz.
All right.
Else get out.
Good on you, Mark.
Right, mate.
See you, mate.
To talk to you. See you soon.
Chris is in Wollongong. Morning, Chris.
Morning, Ian. How are you today?
Oh, good, thank you, Chris. What's happening in the Gong, mate?
Oh, it's all happening in the Gong today, Ian.
Oh, you got the bike race on there now, haven't you? UCI, is that what it's called?
Yeah, the UCI International Cycling Championships are on this morning. Well, they've been on all week, Macca. So
yep.
This is the final for the men's, or the men's elite, kicking off at 10 o'clock.
Yeah, we had a bloke rang us last week and told us he was in the phone box, actually, which you're not in the phone box, are you, Chris?
Well, I'm on a bike ride. I'm doing a recce of the route at the moment, Macca.
Why are you doing a recce?
Well, I just want to see, I've been going with the group here, just to get a taste of what the athletes have been going through over the last week.
You're obviously, Chris, a tragic who wants to ride the Tour de France one day. And
I wouldn't think that time's passed, unfortunately, Macca, but... yeah, I'm certainly one of the Lycra army that's out here in Port and all around Australia that enjoys this sport.
Big, you're a local, Chris, in Wollongong, are you? Or?
No, I've come up from Victoria, Macca. So
you are a tragic.
Yes, well, I think we've migrated from all around the world to be here today, Macca.
So yeah, I know.
This is a great day for cycling in Australia.
Whenever I go to Wollongong, I mean, people ride bikes everywhere, but I mean, I don't know if I had to take a guess, and there was a competition about which capital city, had the most. I'd say Melbourne. There seems to be heaps of bike riders in Melbourne. Am I right?
Oh, it's a fair comment, but I think we're a growing sport around all Australian capital cities and regionally. Cycling's one of those great sports that takes you to all corners of Australia and the globe. So certainly the social aspect of cycling in Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane and Adelaide, where it's
And don't forget Perth and Darwin
and
Hobart and Lonnie. Right. Yeah. But listen, Chrissy, what can you tell us about your recce? What have you found out that you can tell us about the ride?
Well, it's a tough course. There's no doubt about it, Macca. It's undulating. But the beauty of this course, it takes in the beauty of the local area of Wollongong, which is why I was selected. So it starts up at north of town, sort of halfway towards Sydney at Helensburg. And then the cyclists enjoy a great ride down the coast over the sea to Cliff Bridge, I believe it is, over Mount Kira, which is a classic climb. So a mix of, almost tropical-like rainforests all the way down to the ocean vistas and heading south to the city circuit. And then we'll do a 17K loop of the city circuit, which is, again, undulating roads and steep corners and a great mix of climbs and fast descents for the cyclists to try and get an advantage.
So that starts at 10, did you say?
10 till 5, I believe, Macca. It's a 266K course. So, as I said, the men's kick off today, but we've had a great week of racing with the females were yesterday. And I've got to put it to the girls, it was atrocious weather. Wollongong turned on sunny skies, but pouring rain in the final elements of the race.
Wow.
And those girls went through to get the job done. And we had a great sprint finish. Well, breakaway towards the end, but great finish.
Chris, tell me about yourself. What do you do for a crust? Can I ask that?
Oh, mate. Oh, of course. Oh, I'm a desk jockey. So this is my chance to get out.
Well, I'm a desk jockey too. That tells me nothing. Everybody sits at a desk, for God's sake.
Well, it's even worse. I work in finance, Macca, so I stare at screens all day. So I work for a mob called Crestone. But it's great to get out, and the beauty of cycling is it does take you to these lovely places. And
also,
I want to really thank Wollongong for putting on a great show. They bid for this event 4 years ago against the world and the UCI, which is the governing body of cycling all around Australia. Those major races you said with Tour de France and the European majors. They chose Wollongong, and Wollongong's really putting it on.
And as Annie Boyd, and Annie's 74, and she still runs, toddles along to do her marathons, but she said it brings people together, running, and so does bike riding, obviously.
I'd say it's more than 50% of the reason we ride, Macca. We meet great people, like-minded people, enjoy have an active lifestyle, getting out and about and seeing, again, Australia and the world, usually with groups of people. So it's a big part of it.
Chris, thanks for informing Australia. That's what happens here on Sunday morning. People like you ring up and tell us what's going on. It keeps us informed. We know, we sort of know what's going on all over the joint, which I think is important.
Well tune in. I think we're going to have a ding-dong battle this afternoon. We've got six great Australians racing. All the champs. Our local boy, Michael Matthews, is a champ. I'd encourage everyone to dial in if you can. But it's just one of those weekends where there's so much sport on.
I'll say. All right, good on you. Thanks, Chris. Bye.
Thanks again. Have a great day.
Macca, it's Graham Waller from calling you from over Western Australia near Kalgoorlie. How are you?
Good, thanks, Graham.
That's good. We're here at the Piccadilly Races, which is the old pre-1940 old race cars. They're such old cars. They run around an old track. It's a track that's about 4.5 kilometres around, dirt track, bull dust. There's old cars here, old motorbikes. They race around. We're just having a bit of fun. We're just here as spectators, but we're just, having a bit of fun.
And where did you say? Piccadilly or?
Piccadilly, yeah. Piccadilly. It's about 40 kilometres out of Kalgoorlie. Mm-hmm. And, there's nothing there other than
this racetrack.
Variety are sponsoring it this year, so they're looking after everyone pretty well. It's pretty good.
There you go. What else can you tell us? Where are you? You're from Kalgoorlie somewhere, Graham, or what?
No. We're from Northern Rivers in New South Wales. Our businesses got flooded there 6 months ago, so we're recovering from that, trying to get on with life. And we've got family in Western Australia that we're spending time with. My brother-in-law, he's a gold buyer here in Kalgoorlie. So
wow.
He's an interesting fella.
Doesn't that sound interesting? That sounds doesn't it? Sounds interesting.
Pieces of gold.
I'm a gold buyer. Wow.
Well, you should see him, and you should see some of the gold he gets. It's just as big as your hand, the palm of your hand. Just
really?
Amazing.
Oh,
amazing. Simply amazing.
Found...
But your town over here is doing pretty well, Kalgoorlie. It's big mining town, as you'd know, but it's going pretty good. Beautiful, not a cloud in the sky. Looking forward to get back to the races out there today. Very dusty, but the guys, the youngest guy they're racing, I reckon, would be about 75. That would be the youngest guy.
And what sort of cars are they?
Real old, old Buicks, old, my brother-in-law, his friend's racing there, and they pull this motor out of a yard that had sat there for 40 years. They put some fuel in it, play with it a bit, and it started. And that's what he's racing there.
Now, this is
Can
not
you believe that?
This is not like stock cars where they bash into each other.
No. It's really just that they really shouldn't. They don't call it a race. It's just like a time trial.
Yeah.
They do two big laps around this. As I said, it's 4.5 kilometres around. You can't see them the other side of the track. It's a pretty special part of the world. You know, as I said, we're from northern New South Wales, so over here is pretty special for us. You know, the bull dust and the red dirt and. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I wish I was there. I bet it's a sight to see, mate. I bet that'd be a lovely experience to do what you're doing.
No, it's good. Yeah.
Piccadilly. Piccadilly. And I'd love to see some of those old cars too. And blokes you love to see, and blokes who love to fix them because they need fixing all the time because they're leaking.
They break down. But as I said, the youngest bloke I think would be 75. You know, so they're all having fun.
Graham, we'll catch up to you sometime, either in the Northern Rivers or somewhere. Piccadilly.
Yeah,
is that on every year, this Piccadilly?
Well, no, not really. They just spread it out a bit because otherwise it gets too hard, you know, like with all confirmed with with everything. But every second year or so, but it's a good one. It's a really good one. Really enjoy your show, Macca.
Graham, lovely to talk to you, mate. Thanks for that.
Right on. Thank you.
Bye.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.